You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is Weekend Perspective. I'm Kitty Dunn, and today we're talking with Michael Massey, who, if you've lived in the Madison area a while, you might recognize the name as a Madison musician. He's written a memoir about his almost making it in rock and roll, and also the challenges of alcoholism and how he's come through it and has a different definition of success nowadays. Michael Massey, thanks for taking time out with us.
Thank you, Kitty. Thank you so much.
So let's start out by talking about Mike Massey, rock star in the 70s and 80s. What you tell a lot of bizarre, funny stories about almost making it. Give us kind of a taste of what we'll find out about in the book.
Well, you know, when you're 19 and 20 years old, the world is your oyster. Regardless of what you're doing, you're immortal and bulletproof. And I was lucky enough to be traveling the country as frontman in a rock and roll band. We rubbed elbows with a lot of people that were in the upper echelons of the music business at that time in L.A. and New York, and it was a heady time. I don't want to give too much away.
Oh, come on! You got to give us a little bit more than that. So the band was Chaser. Now you've mentioned a couple bands you were in, but the band that I'm most familiar with is Chaser.
Yes. Chaser came very close to a major record deal with Atlantic Records in the days when that was really the only way to do it, to achieve widespread success. It was a totally different music business back then.
Yeah, there was no internet, there was no Spotify, there was no YouTube, there was no, you know, none of that had been dreamed of yet.
No, not at all. Yeah, it was a different time. We played 300 shows a year for about 3 years and really honed the live show. Andy Warhol came to the studio in New York and hung out with us. We've got some wonderful pictures of that.
How did that come about, that you're hanging out with Andy Warhol? You're having your 15 minutes or more with Andy Warhol.
Yeah. Our manager's brother was a personal friend of Andy, and we had written a song called Andy that was loosely based on his life and his escapades, and we pulled the favor, and he came over and liked his song, so we were fortunate to have him in the studio with us.
We're talking with Michael Massey. His book is called More, a memoir about his days in rock and roll and also dealing with alcoholism. So drinking was a part of all of this for you.
Drinking was a part of just about everything for me starting at about 15 years old. It was just pervasive and constant. And just escalated and ramped up as the music career kept going, and as the music career failed, it became even worse.
So it was a way to celebrate, but it was also a way to drown your sorrows.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit of like an example of something that you talk a little bit, or you mentioned throughout the book, like regrets, like missed opportunities, possibly because you were intoxicated. Like, what are we talking about?
Well, just for an example, Chaser played a show at what no longer exists. It was called Flipper's Roller Boogie Palace.
Okay.
In Hollywood. And it was a place where a lot of very big name acts would play, and they would debut new music or whatever. And we played in the stage in the middle of the Roller Boogie Palace, and people roller skated around us. But we had 8 major labels in the audience. They had all RSVP'd, and they came because they had heard our demo and were very interested in the band. And because I drank just a little bit too much, I was off my game.
Mm.
And at that point, you really only had one chance to make a first impression, and mine wasn't good. And even back then, even when alcohol, when people raised, you know, bottles of Jack in arenas all over the world and people cheered, it's still, a record label's not going to invest in you if you're a loose cannon in front. And that's what I was. I had a subpar show, and I still, it still hurts me to think about that to this day, because you never know what could have happened. Although, we all talk about the fact that if we had achieved a higher level of success, we'd probably all be dead anyway.
Well, that's one way to balance it out, I guess. Yeah. My guest is Michael Massey, and the book is called More. And another brush with greatness that happened for you, and that's that you got to be on the 80s talent show.
Star Search.
Star Search. I was blanking out on Ed McMahon's show. You were on Star Search, and that ended up being a disappointment, too.
Well, yeah. I had hidden a bottle in my suitcase for that one. So as you can see, everything was
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Escalating. I'm not positive that alcohol caused that one to be negative. I think I kind of held it in check for that show, but I hate talent contests. I don't think anybody that should win ever does. And that includes The Voice and American Idol to this day. So, you know, as evidenced by people like Jennifer Hudson who don't win and then, you know, on their way to an EGOT.
Yeah, exactly. So you write through, it's interesting how you do the book where you're like talking about the rock and roll and then talking about your recovery in back and forth chapters. So what was it that finally made you decide enough is enough? I mean, was it a rock bottom experience or what happened?
My wife Robin had thrown me out of the house. She had had enough. She couldn't deal with it anymore. I was living with an ex musical partner in a bad part of town, and I looked out the window and saw a car burning in the parking lot below me, and people standing around it with beer in their hands, like it was a 4th of July picnic, watching it like it was an entertainment. And I thought, how far have I fallen? You know, how long I happiest man in the world the day I got married. Wasn't it just yesterday that I was in New York doing, you know, making a demo for Atlantic? What happened to me? So I said, I quit. Can I come home? And she said, I've heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
So she gave me 3 days. I came home. And then 5 days after I stopped drinking, I went into acute withdrawal and had hallucinations and ended up in the ER and in the hospital for 5 days. And an inpatient treatment for 15 more. And I never looked back. At that moment, I had made the decision, and I call it flipping your switch. I think that we have the power within us to change ourselves for the positive. And at that point, drinking was never again an option for me. And I've worked hard ever since then and created a life that wouldn't exist had I not stopped.
So what advice do you have for people that are having a problem with alcohol and they need to flip that switch? Is there something you can do to help them flip the switch, or is this something they've got to do on their own?
And therein lies the quandary. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish that I could help everyone. I wish I could help to find that switch, which on the surface is very simple, but underneath is not. I mean, if there was a quick fix for addiction, you know, there wouldn't be as much suffering in the world. But I do believe that there are strategies that can be used. I think that once you give yourself over to that change, it becomes simpler. I think you feel a weight lift off your shoulders. I think that the world just becomes new again. And if you can get to that point, it becomes pretty simple. I'm working on a presentation. That's what I want to do. I want to pivot for the rest of my life into a presentation and talk about my life and try to help people find their switch. And I'm working on terminology to speak about that worked for me. And I'm working on how to word that and how to make that most best received.
That's great. Good luck with that. And I hope you help a lot of people. One thing it was very obvious in the book is that a big hero of the story is your wife, Robin. So talk a little bit about her and how she helped with all of this.
Without her, I would not be talking to you. It's that simple. To have her support through all of my darkest times and all of my failures is priceless. I credit her completely with helping with my sobriety. Honestly, I can't say it enough. Without her and without her support, it just wouldn't have worked. I'm the most fortunate man in the world.
And now you have a couple of great daughters that you wouldn't have had if you had continued on that path.
Exactly.
Pretty fantastic. But there have been challenges along the way. And in 2020, right before the pandemic, you and your wife were involved in a horrific, horrific car crash. And how did that affect your ability to stay sober? I mean, a lot of people would cross back over when something that horrible happens.
It's interesting. You are only the third person that has inquired about that. It surprised me that people weren't more concerned about the fact that I would be in danger of relapsing.
Because you were in a lot of pain, plus, you know, seeing your wife in such rough shape. I mean, that would make, the Jack Daniels look pretty friendly at that point, I would think.
Yeah, and I don't even know what to attribute it to, except the fact that way back when I flipped that switch,
it stayed flipped.
It was irreversible. And you know, if I can somehow express this and help people realize it and what I made happen, I'll be doing a lot of good in the world. And that's what I'm trying to do. And, to go back to your question, I never once even thought about it.
Really?
I never once even thought about relapsing until my friend, who was also a recovering addict, asked me about my sobriety. And I went, oh, yeah, that probably could have been an issue, huh?
But you weren't that person anymore.
I was not. I am not. And let me be clear. I don't think that there's no such thing as a recovered alcoholic. I'm still recovering. But I feel pretty confident in my recovery.
Well, that's fantastic. And the book is a fun read if you're interested in rock and roll and the sex, drugs. There's not a lot of sex in this book, but...
there could have been a little more, but I decided not to put it in there.
The book is called More, a Memoir, and there's an audiobook as well, and you narrated that?
I did. I narrated it, and I found out how really talented people like you are when you are speaking with your word, because the editing became a 3-month, 4-month long dredge after my hack job of reading the book. It sounds good now, but it took a long time to get there.
The book is called More, a Memoir. My guest is Michael Massey. You can look for the book on Amazon, local bookstores as well. And do you have a website that you want to tell people about?
I do, MikeMasseyMusic.com.
All right, Michael Massey, thanks so much for taking time with us. And good luck as you spread the good word of sobriety.
Thank you, Kitty.
And thank you for listening for Weekend Perspective. I'm Kitty Dunn.